You are listening to the Tuesday, August 29th edition of RotoViz Radio, brought to you by MyBookie. I'm Pat Corain on Twitter at Pat Corain, and with me is Jacob Brickroad on Twitter at Clutch Fantasy. Jake, how's it going?
Good, Pat. Just one more weekend without real football.
It's, wow.
It's right around the corner. Yep. And you're going to be in Vegas.
Yeah, we will be in Vegas. I'm going out to draft for the FFPC main event. Me and Pete Overzet, the host of Fantasyland, we are going to be co-owning a team for the second time. And so we're real excited about that. We're also going to have a live Fantasyland show. So I don't know if you're setting me up for a plug here or not, but I'm going to take it because we're going to be doing a Fantasyland episode live on the Thursday before the Thursday before the Thursday night game to kick off the NFL season. So if you're in Vegas, even if you're not doing the FFPC, you can I forget exactly what the entry is, but it's pretty cheap if you want to come and see the show and the viewing party for the game. So
Planet I definitely Hollywood.
Encourage anyone who's around at the Planet Hollywood. That's probably an important detail, right?
Yeah.
But yeah. So Jake, I guess some sad news with that is I was psyched to see you out there because you've been going out there for years and years, but unfortunately this year won't be one of them.
I have a work obligation and no one wants to hear me cry on RotoViz Radio. I will be joining you, but I will be there in spirit and definitely going to check it out, man. I know there's some special guests. I'm sure you'll be talking to some high stakes people that I'm very familiar with, and maybe a Matt Kelly appearance.
Yeah, there might be a double Matt Kelly appearance. I'll kind of tease it like that. It should be
a fantasy mansion, the Podfather himself.
Yeah, we have an interesting segment set up for Matt Kelly that will take advantage of his argumentative nature. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
But
we have a great show for you here as well. We've got John Paulson of 4for4.com, one of the most accurate rankers in the business. And I feel like this is a perfect week to get him on after the third preseason game with as much happened over the weekend, injuries and just general craziness. So we dive into all of that, and I feel like he's one of the perfect guys to listen to right before you're getting ready for drafts. And you know, this is the week when drafts are really going down for all the redraft leagues out there. So definitely a ton of really great stuff from John in this episode.
Yeah, John's one of the best, and you know, I think we gave him some pretty good questions, and he kind of revealed his process on things. Something I want to talk about. I brought this up on Twitter. You know, I looked at the last 5 years for top 12 scoring wide receiver, and most years that guy's doing 260 points. That's been the wide receiver 12. There's been 2 years where it was 237. And I made the comment that if someone is projecting a wide receiver one, you know, a top 12 wide receiver to have less than 237, they're probably too conservative. Right? Because, you know, the last 5 years historically. And then Mike Clay jumped in and gave his take and, talk about one of the best in the business. So we kind of pick John's brain about that and just how, you know, he uses historical stats like that or not for his process of projecting. And he's obviously one of the most accurate around.
Yeah. Yeah. That was definitely an interesting part of it to hear how these guys, you know, create these projections that are just consistently so accurate. So cool to hear kind of some process information as well, just beyond just kind of the targets for this year, which we get into as well. But, you know, you're talking about historical stats, Jake. I want to talk to you about one of your articles, which we may have buried the lead here. I mean, you were published on RotoWorld since the last time we talked. So, congratulations, and everyone check out Jake's article on RotoWorld called Chasing the Top 24 Wide Receivers. Really great stuff here.
Really lucky. I don't know how it happened, but it ended up there, and I'm pretty excited about it.
It's an awesome article.
Well, I've been writing it for years on RotoViz and put a new spin on it. And the kind of the gist of it is just laying out the PPR finishes by year of all the receivers and, you know, lining those up and seeing what kind of trends there are. And it's incredibly sticky, the top 24 is. And I break it down by year. And, you know, you can get more details in the article. But basically, 80% of the top 12 performances come from the same receivers. So there was 62 receivers since 2000. They had three or more top 24 years. And my premise is you find those guys that have had two top 24 years, and you draft as many as you can. And a lot of them are going to end up in the top 24, you know, 18 out of 24 end up in the top 24 almost every single year. It's pretty wild how, like I said, how sticky that is. Even when we know this is a weekly game and things happen, there's a lot of variables, but yet the same wide receivers continue to get it done. And I listed some of the newbies from last year. There was, you know, five wide receivers that hit the top 24 for the first time, and then a few that missed, you know, the Allen Robinsons and Jordan Matthews. And you know, it's funny how some names from the past show up. Kendall Wright had a top 24 season, and you know, it's been a few years, but he's in the right position now after the Cameron Meredith injury to maybe jump back in. So these top 24 wide receivers just have a way of getting back in there.
Yeah, and I love the takeaways you have at the end of the article. You know, you mentioned that these guys tend to repeat. There's 45 active wide receivers listed in the grid, and then 29 of the receivers have had two or more top 24 seasons. So there's lots of guys, lots of targets that you can get out of reading this article. So I would highly recommend you know, everyone going to RotoWorld and checking this thing out. To be honest, the easiest way I found it was just Googling RotoWorld Jacob Rickrode, and it's the second article to come up after your article that you had published over the summer there on Dynasty hit rates, so Dynasty rookie pick hit rates. So, you know, the awesome stuff, and great to see you back on RotoWorld again.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I really appreciate that, and hopefully this helps some people out in their drafts. You know, with fingers crossed that it keeps rolling, and I think it will.
Awesome, man. Well, one little thing I wanted to get into you here before we get to John. You know, you're not going to be able to make it to Vegas, but I wanted to make sure that you know, and that our listeners know, that if you are thinking about putting some money down on a game, even if you're not able to get out to Vegas, then you should use our sponsor for this week and for the weeks to come here, MyBookie. So, Jake, have you been thinking about putting anything down? I know you're mostly a fantasy guy, but are you have any?
No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I every year I put money down when I go to my high stakes draft, and I'm not going to be able to do it, so I'm going to have to jump on MyBookie.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, we're not just kind of picking MyBookie out of the blue here. They do 100% cash bonuses, so you know, this is the reason to use them, because you put your deposit in and they match it with 100% bonus, so you're making money right off the bat. As long as you use our promo code ROTO RADIO, ROTO RADIO, to activate the offer. That's mybookie.ag is the site. They have in-game betting, live betting, all new mobile site. Jake, have you done any live betting? That's one thing, the in-game live betting. I'm actually really interested in trying some of that out this year on MyBookie.
Oh, I definitely plan on it. What's the address, Kim? MyBookie.ag?
MyBookie.ag. So definitely go to MyBookie, put some money down. I mean, even if you put down, you know, a minimal deposit, then they'll match it 100% with the offer code ROTO RADIO. But yeah, for now, let's get to our guest, John Paulson of 444.com, on Twitter at 444_John. Hey, RotoViz fans, I want to take a minute to tell you about our friends at the FFPC, who are celebrating their 10th year as the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. Over the last few years, the FFPC has become the go-to destination for serious Dynasty players. They now have over 150 active Dynasty leagues, and here's something incredible. Not a single Dynasty league has folded in 7 years. As if that's not enough, the FFPC has just launched the greatest format ever, Dynasty Draft Experts Leagues. They have all the best features of best ball, with optimized scoring, no lineup submissions, and no head-to-head playoffs. And they also have waivers and trading, as you'd expect in Dynasty. New startup Dynasty Draft Experts Leagues are forming now, with entry fees starting at $77 and going up to $1,250 per team. The FFPC also features the world's greatest contest in season-long fantasy football. Come to the Planet Hollywood Resort and Casino in Las Vegas this September, draft in the FFPC main event, and spend opening NFL weekend in Vegas with hundreds of diehards just like you. If you can't make it to Vegas, you can still draft online from the comfort of home and compete for the massive $250,000 grand prize with over $1.7 million in total cash prizes. Don't miss the FFPC experience. Go to myffpc.com and register now. That's myffpc.com. Join your fellow players today at the FFPC, the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football.
Please welcome to the show, John Paulson. He's a editor and owner over at 444. You can find him, 444.com. You can follow him on Twitter at 444_John. He's a co-host of the Most Accurate Podcast. John, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, thrilled to have you. The timing of this, you know, right before the season starts. And we just finished the dress rehearsal of week three preseason games. So tell us what your biggest revelation from the preseason so far that's going to affect 2017 outside of all these crazy injuries.
Well, I think, you know, talking week three specifically, I was really encouraged to see that John Brown was able to score a couple touchdowns and gain 49 yards from scrimmage after what had been a couple of rough weeks for him in terms of his quad injury. He's got that sickle cell trait, and the way Bruce Arians was talking about him, it was almost like he wasn't counting on him for week one. And it's nice to have him back in the fold and healthy enough to play. And I think he's a nice risk-reward pick there in the 9th, 10th round. His ADP slipped over the last few weeks due to the injury, and it's nice to have him back. I think the other thing I noticed from week three was that Marquise Goodwin had that long catch there for the 49ers. And he, you know, with Kyle Shanahan there, that, you know, maybe he's going to fill that Taylor Gabriel role. We don't have quite as good a quarterback situation, quite a good offense, but maybe Goodwin's a minimum play in DFS or something like that.
John, Jake mentioned the injuries, you know, what were your takeaways excluding the injuries, but let's get into the injuries that we saw over the weekend because there were a bunch. Let's start with Spencer Ware, one of the biggest injuries of the preseason so far. He's out for the season now with a knee injury. Looking at your rankings that take this into account, you now have Kareem Hunt up at running back 15. Hunt's been an exciting fit for Andy Reid's offense. I know Jake's been really excited about the fit. Hunt's been kind of an exciting prospect even before he was drafted as well. Do you think he has top 10 PPR running back upside in this offense?
I do. I mean, I have him at 15 in PPR. I have him at 12 in standard, so pretty similar. I have him ranked as a high-end RB2. If you just look at what Ware did over the last 17 games where he's seen at least 10 carries, 13 of those games happened in 2016. He averaged 17.9 touches for 99 yards, 0.59 touchdowns. That works out to 15.5 fantasy points per game in PPR, and that's top eight numbers in 2016. So I think if you're looking at Hunt as the bell cow now, or the top back there, he has that sort of upside if he sees that sort of workload. And I think 18 touches or so are within reach for him. He might start off a little bit slower than that, and maybe they try to work in Charcandrick West since he has experience, or CJ Spiller and some certain sets to try to take advantage of his speed. But I really think that based on what they've been doing in the preseason, giving him an extended look with the starters against the Bengals, with the way that Andy Reid is talking about him as the feature back, as the clear guy, I think you can target him in the 4th round, feel really comfortable there. And I know in the 3rd round, some owners are looking at him, and I think it's a reasonable pick there as well.
I forgot CJ Spiller was still on that roster. Maybe he's a deep, deep sleeper candidate.
Yeah, deep, deep.
Deep, deep, deep. Let's go over to another one of the big injuries here. Cameron Meredith, also recently tore his ACL, probably other knee damage as well based on early reports. My first reaction to the injury fantasy-wise was that it's probably a hit to the offense overall. He's their top guy, but does it at least raise Kevin White's stock pretty considerably?
I would say it raises it a bit. I mean, I wouldn't get too excited about him in the single-digit rounds. I mean, I think you could start looking at him in the I would look at him in the 11th, 12th round. You could maybe argue for the 10th round if you're looking at him as the number one receiver there. Kendall Wright is going to get some extra work, and Deontay Thompson was actually out-snapped Wright after Meredith went down in that game. So it could be that Wright is going to be the third guy, regardless of whether or not Meredith is there, and he's not going to be there given the ACL injury. But it might be Thompson and White as the top two receivers and two wide receiver sets, and then Wright coming in on three wide receiver sets. But I think Wright will be more productive than Thompson. But you know, Thompson is a very, very deep sleeper if you're in like a 16 team, 20-25 roster type of a league. White has the draft stock, you know, draft capital, number 7 pick, I believe, overall. They've targeted him a ton when he's been healthy. He just hasn't done very well with it, but it sounds like he's trending up after that injury last year, and it seems to be getting back into form. We just don't know how good he is.
So Kendall Wright's on the team there too, and he actually had a top 24 season a few years ago. Is he worth a stab late in drafts?
Yeah, I think I moved him up about as much as I moved up Kevin White. I think that they both get a bump, and you know, maybe Wright sees an extra 20 or 30 targets now that he wasn't going to see with Meredith in the fold. He certainly has the longest track record, I guess, unless you're counting Victor Cruz there. But Wright, you know, kind of fell out of favor in Tennessee, was freelancing on too many of his routes. And left there, and landed with the Bears, who sort of added a bunch of veteran receivers, hoping to shore up the position. And it looks like he's risen into the starting lineup, or at least was going to play 60-70% of the snaps.
Yeah, interesting situation over there. Another huge blow this weekend was Julian Edelman, done for the year. And you know, his value was kind of all over the map with Brandon Cooks coming in. And one of the things I've noticed from the New England slot wide receiver, going back to Welker, is that this slot wide receiver, counting Welker and Edelman, hasn't finished outside the top 20 in PPR in over a decade. The last time it did was 2015, and Edelman actually averaged 19 points per game in 9 games that year. So I think that the slot wide receiver position is pretty important to New England, and there's talk that the running backs are going to cover that. Amendola is never very good, you know, they gave him a huge contract, but he never really took over that role. And then you got this Chris Hogan guy who last year played most of his work outside, but in Buffalo he was playing in the slot, and looking at his stats, including the playoffs, he's a pretty damn good receiver with Brady. He's got over 800 yards if you count the playoffs, and what, 5 touchdowns with Brady. So I saw that you have Hogan ranked at wide receiver 42 following the Edelman injury. How do you see New England filling those targets that Edelman would have received?
Well, I think there's a case we made that Amendola will come in and play more, but I don't really buy it. I mean, he's going to get a little bit of a bump, but I think most of the playing time and the targets are going to go to Hogan. I think he was an 80%, 79.7% snap guy last year as the number 2 receiver to Edelman. And now that Edelman's out of the way, we have Cooks as likely the wide receiver 1. So I think Hogan's playing time is going to stay consistent to last year. It's just taking a big jump from what we were expecting with Edelman and Cooks both healthy. I think we were looking at Hogan as the third receiver, more of a deep threat, versatile receiver that he is. I mean, he can run really any route. I think there were some stats floating around on Twitter where he, you know, did most of his damage in the slot in Buffalo. Edelman, I think, ran 50% of his snaps or thereabouts last year out of the slot. So it wasn't like he was 100% slot receiver. So I think you could pretty much do a 1-for-1 replacement with Hogan and in for Edelman if you want, if the Patriots want to do that. I don't know that that'll be the case. I'm sure Malcolm Mitchell gets a bump. He gets some of Hogan's snaps there as maybe the third receiver. And then you bring in Amendola in certain situations as the pure slot receiver. But, you know, I have a lot of, good feelings about Hogan there, especially where you can get him in the 9th, 10th, 11th round, given the history of the slot position there that you mentioned. That's a lot of upside if you're getting maybe a top 20, top 25 guy. Even if he doesn't make that top 20, you're getting him as the 42nd or later receiver off the board. I think that's real good value.
Yeah, he jumps off the page for me, especially if Brady ends up throwing for 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns. Is that about where you have him projected?
I'm having him for a real close to a career year. Obviously, he had the 50 touchdown year a while back, but I have him for about 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns. I really didn't downgrade him much with losing Edelman, because I think Hogan is just as good. You know, if we start to lose another receiver, or if Gronk gets dinged up, or something happens to Cooks, then you have to start to downgrade Brady, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I went back and looked at Brady's 2011 with last time he threw for 5,039 touchdowns. And Welker went crazy, 1,500 yards, 122 receptions. Gronk had 90, 1,300 yards, 17 touchdowns. And then Hernandez actually had 79 receptions, 910 yards, and 7 touchdowns. So that third pass catcher was still borderline top 24. And if Hogan ends up being that guy, he could slide right in there. And Deion Branch actually had 90 targets that year, you know, 50 for 705. There should be a ton of value there. The big question is how much of that of those targets go to the running backs, I guess.
Yeah, James White should see a little bit of a bump here since some of these shorter routes might go to him. He was taking a little bit of a hit with the addition of Cooks, you know, with Edelman and Gronk still healthy, but I think he's back to being a really nice 9th, 10th round value in PPR formats.
Yeah, for sure. So switching over to quarterback, you have a Marcus Mariota ranked top 10. Is that correct?
Yes, I have him at number 5, actually.
That's I think that's pretty high compared to the rest of the industry. Can you discuss what kind of season we can expect from him?
Well, what I like about Mariota is a couple things. One, if you look at his splits, I mean, he's missed some games due to injury, which has kind of caused his season-long finishes to not be as representative of how productive he is when he's healthy. So if you look at his 27 NFL games, he's averaged 17.7 fantasy points per game in standard formats. That's about what Dak Prescott scored as the number 6 fantasy quarterback last year. When you remove his 6 attempt passing or pass attempt game against the Patriots in his rookie year, that average jumps up to 18.3 fantasy points. So the key for him is just to stay healthy. I think he's got the ability to throw the ball. He can add points in the running game if the passing game's not going great. And what I love about Mariota this year specifically is that they added Corey Davis, 5th overall pick, Eric Decker, hugely productive, especially in the red zone. I think that's a indicator that they're looking to open up the passing game a little bit and not being so run heavy and giving Mariota more control over the offense. And I think that really bodes well for his outlook. And you can get Mariota in the 8th or 9th round, and that's a real good value.
Yeah, and I just want to kind of drill down on your quarterback philosophy for this season a little more. Is Mariota the guy you think you'll own the most of this year? And if not, what quarterback do you think you'll have the most of in your redraft leagues? And what rounds are you most targeting quarterbacks in this year?
I think I have an MFL 10s. I have Mariota in quite a few leagues. It's not every league because there's always, not always, but there's sometimes a receiver there that I like to take in the 8th round, and then he's not there in the 9th round, and I'm fine with that because I don't want to invest too much in a guy who has been dinged up in his career. I think getting into the later rounds, I do think that Matthew Stafford's a really good value given his track record. 5 out of 6, I think, in the top 10, 5 of the last 6 years. He's available in the 10th or 11th round. He's been very productive with Jim Bob Cooter as the offensive coordinator there in Detroit. They're not throwing the ball as much, but his interceptions are way down. He's still getting the touchdowns, and he's also able to run a little bit, especially in the red zone. He'll run in for a score or two. So I like him in the 10th or 11th round. Andy Dalton, I've been getting quite a bit of in the 11th, 12th round. His splits with a healthy AJ Green are great. They're top 10, top 8. And they added John Ross, obviously, the 4.22 speedster, giving him a weapon that can take the top off the defense. And on top of that, you have a healthy Tyler, or a relatively healthy Tyler Eifert at tight end, who's a red zone monster as well. So even if Dalton's not the most talented quarterback you can get in fantasy at that point in the draft, he's part of a really productive offense with a lot of weapons to throw to. I think generally speaking, I'm late round quarterback like most fantasy analysts. But there are a couple situations where, you know, I might take a Brady in the 4th round if I'm just not, or 3rd or 4th round if I'm not excited about the options available there. It's just a weird part of the draft there in the 3rd where there's a drop off of talent at the running back and wide receiver positions, and it's hard to justify taking some of those guys over a player I think is going to throw for 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns.
Where would Andrew Luck have to get to you for at this point for you to have to draft him? 12th, 13th, even later?
As soon as he asked that question, I heard Andrew Luck's name. I just started shaking my head. I don't like guys with injuries that are lingering. They're already injured, and you're just not sure they're going to even play in week one or week two. And this is an ongoing shoulder issue with him. It would have to be like 9th, 10th round for me to get him. And I know he's not going to last that long because somebody's going to pull the trigger probably 6th, 7th, 8th round on him. I'd rather have Mariota at this point because he's healthy. And I think he can be just as productive when he's healthy.
That's interesting. Yeah. I checked the fantasy football calculator ADP before I brought him up, and he's going in the 9th there now. And on your rankings, you have him 16th behind Dalton, who you mentioned at 14th. So, As you mentioned, you know, you could get Dalton later on, 11th, 12th round. Luck still more expensive than you have him ranked after. But if he does fall a little bit more, I feel like personally I'd be tempted on him in the double digit rounds.
Well, the other thing you could do with Luck is if you get him in the 9th, let's say you get into the 9th round and there's just nobody there that you really want, and you don't have a quarterback yet, you could take Luck, and then maybe you draft a Carson Palmer in the 13th or 14th round, because he's got a really good opening schedule. And if you're willing to platoon and take up two roster spots with quarterbacks, you could ride Palmer for the first few weeks as long as until Luck is back and healthy and productive again for you. Because, you know, if you do get Luck and he's his normal self for the last 10 games of the season, that's a big advantage to get in the 9th round.
Interesting. Is there anyone else who's jumped out to you like Palmer for having that kind of early season, easy slate in the beginning that you could ride those first couple weeks if you are looking to basically platoon and or stream for the entire season?
Yeah, one player that I've sort of warmed to over the last few weeks is Sam Bradford. He did better in the second half of the season after Pat Shurmur took over as the offensive coordinator there. And if you look at his opening schedule, he's got the Saints in week one. So that pretty much covers you for that first week without Luck. And then he's got at Pittsburgh, which isn't the worst matchup in the world. He's got Tampa Bay at home and then Detroit at home and then at Chicago. So even for the first 5 weeks, there's probably, you know, one or two matchups there that are a little bit daunting. You're not going to get top five numbers out of him, but he could probably get you by with baseline top 12, top 15 numbers during that stretch of the season.
Interesting. Maybe a sneaky case for Stephon Diggs to start the season as well then. Wanted to move over to the Browns, who have their starting quarterback named DeShone Kizer. He's not necessarily all that interesting on his own, but I'm curious what you think about how Kizer will affect the rest of the Cleveland offense, both the running game and passing game. Did you adjust your rankings at all for the Browns when Kizer was named? Did you kind of already have that factored in there since Kizer looked like he was going to be the starter? But I guess I'm just curious how you think Kizer affects the offense versus, you know, Kessler or Osweiler.
Well, when I originally did the projections for the Browns, my assumption was Cody Kessler was going to be the starter with, you know, there's a chance that Kizer was going to win that job given the draft capital that they used on him. I didn't have Kessler, you know, throwing the balls a ton or being super productive with it. So I didn't change the projections too much for Kizer coming in because he's a rookie quarterback and pretty unknown. The one thing I did do is increase their rushing yards because I do anticipate him, taking off and running more than Kessler did. And that resulted in a little bit of a reduction in their pass attempts. I've got them projected for 6.7 yards per attempt and 17 passing touchdowns right now, which I think is a fairly fair, projection for Kizer as a rookie with kind of a shaky offense there in Cleveland.
Nice. I do a lot of work on historical stats, and one of the things I look for is trends. And looking at the wide receiver position, so in 2016, four receivers had 298 PPR points or more. Six wide receivers accomplished that in 2015, and eight wide receivers had 295 points or more in 2014. And I got in a discussion with Mike Clay about this because I see a lot of projections where they only have two wide receivers that are 300 plus point range. What's your take on this? And do you take historical stats like that into consideration when you do projections?
I wouldn't take numbers like that and say I need to have four or six receivers over 300 points because this is what's happened over the last several years. The way we do our projections is we start with team wins and historical trends with the team, and then you get your team projections together, and then you start divvying that up based on historical trends amongst the number one receiver, number two receiver, number three receiver, running backs, et cetera. And you end up with what you end up with. And then I look at the rankings and I'm more looking at, is player A ahead of player B, or, you know, who am I going to actually draft when it comes down to the third round, 10th pick. And then I start to adjust the projections a little bit for that. But, I wouldn't say I need to have an X number at this level or an X number or Y number at this level, because it's really about getting to a point where I'm comfortable with each player's projection and then his ranking within his position. Just having somebody at, you know, having a fourth or fifth receiver at 300 plus just to go with the historical trends doesn't really go in line with what we do at 4 for 4.
That's cool. I can totally respect that process. Do you think that some rankers hedge their bets? So they go a little conservative just because?
I think, if a player has an outlandish season and scores a bunch of touchdowns and it's a real high rate for him historically or for the position, I think you are expecting some regression. And then I guess it depends on the ranker whether or not, because I do look at on a league level, total passing yards or total receiving yards, total touchdowns, all that. And I want to make sure that I'm somewhat in line with that. I don't want to have necessarily a 10 or 15% jump in any of those numbers because that's not how the league works. It goes up kind of slowly year to year. I don't know if people are being conservative on purpose or if it's just the kind of the nature of the beast that you're like, okay, well, this guy, he doubled his career touchdown rate this year. I think we're expecting that to fall back to earth and maybe only falls back halfway when reality happens. And then a lot of times when you're talking about these maybe 300 point receivers, it's guys that you don't expect. So it doesn't make sense to just rank player A, B, C, and D all at 300 if you don't really believe that's what's going to happen.
Gotcha. Ben Gretsch, one of our RotoViz writers, started a podcast last week, and he was talking about how the wide receiver 3 and 4 range in points was increasing. Have you seen that at all? Is that something that's showing up in your data to where maybe the ball's getting distributed and some of the higher end guys are getting less targets because, you know, you have wide receiver 2s and 3s becoming more viable?
Well, I have noticed that receivers, it's not that specific fact, but I have noticed that the receiver position is super deep this year, and it's probably stemming from that. It's probably a symptom of what you're talking about. That would all be taken into account during our projections process as I look at what the wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3 for a particular team, what market share they had on their team. And in the last year, the last 2 years, and those would definitely trend up as well. And I think that's why we have a position that's really pretty deep this year.
Yeah, I feel like, the NFL's ever evolving too. You get it just changes every 5 years, it seems like. So it's just be fascinating to see how this plays out going forward. But give us one player that you're very high on that may be contrarian from the rest of the industry.
Well, I was looking at your question and I came up with two. So the first one's Darren Sproles. I just looked at his standard ADP and he's not really doesn't get much buzz in standard, but I have him ranked 34th. He's got an ADP of 51 at his position. He's finished in the top 30. He finished 30th last year in 2016 and has three top 35 seasons in the last 4 years. I think he's going to get quite a bit of work in Philly there with LeGarrette Blount not looking that great. LeGarrette Blount's not very versatile as a receiver or anything like that. So I think Sproles might end up playing the most snaps of any of those running backs in that backfield, and that will boost his value a little bit in standard. He's not a guy you necessarily want to start, but he's a nice guy to have on the bench who has a chance of gaining 60 to 100 total yards and finding the end zone for you in any given week. The other guy is Tyrell Williams. I have him at 28 in standard. His ADP is at 41. I just really like his skill set. He did really well in Matt Harmon's reception perception study as a route runner. He was a lot better than he's given credit for. He's got a huge catch radius. He was number 12 in standard last year, 18 in PPR as the Chargers' number one receiver. And he's playing playing alongside Keenan Allen, who isn't the most durable receiver. So if he goes down with another injury, suddenly you have a wide receiver one, wide receiver two there in Williams. And he led the team in targets inside the opponent 10-yard line, even with Hunter Henry and Antonio Gates there. He had 8 targets inside the 10. So I think he might score an extra few touchdowns this year.
Awesome. Another guy who you're high on is Pierre Garçon. And he's someone that you're high on. You've also been higher on him about 10 spots higher than the general consensus. I feel like he's been a value pretty much the entire offseason. What do you think drafters are overlooking with Garçon?
Yeah, I think when the offseason started, he was 41st or 42nd off the board after he'd signed with the 49ers. And you start looking at the situation and the way they sort of left the situation there. They didn't draft a receiver real high. So he doesn't have much competition in terms of targets. He was number 22 wide receiver in PPR last year. So he's, you know, that's 12, or actually that's more. He's the 34th receiver off the board. So that's 12 spots right there if he just matches what he did last year. He was 31st the year before, so there's some equity there as well. And he's just been a consistent PPR force for quite a while now. And now he's rejoining Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco. Last time they were together in 2013, Garçon had 113 catches for 1,346 yards, 5 touchdowns. He was the number 11 PPR receiver that year. I don't know that he's going to do that again, but if he plays 16 games and he gets, you know, 140, 150 targets, I think he could catch 90 to 100 balls in his sleep and really be a nice value there. I've been taking him in the sixth round in virtually every PPR draft that I'm a part of.
Yeah, and I guess this will kind of be contingent on the 49ers not being just a wasteland offense. But, I mean, my feeling on it has been that, you know, with Shanahan there and Hoyer there, who's a professional quarterback, they won't be. How big of a concern is it, do you think? You know, they were so bad last year. They really couldn't support anything in the passing game. Except, you know, a few flexible weeks out of Jeremy Curley was really all you got. So is that a major concern, or is that, in my opinion, that's probably what's keeping his value too low. But how worried are you about that?
I'm not real concerned about the 49er offense. I think Kyle Shanahan will make a big difference there. Garçon is better than any of the receivers that they had there last year. And Hoyer should offer decent quarterback play. And then if you get into a bad season where they go 4-12 or something like that, they are going to have to throw the ball a lot because they're going to find themselves in negative game script. And you know, I'd be more worried about it if Garçon were like touchdown dependent, but he's not. He's a catch yardage guy. And in PPR, I think that's golden. I mean, I don't need him to score more than 3 or 4 touchdowns really to be a starter at in the sixth round. I think he's perfectly viable there with low touchdowns.
Awesome. All right, one last question here for you, John. I kind of need you to talk me off the ledge a little bit. Scott Fishbowl drafted a few weeks ago, a month or more ago. But when I was in the first round, I ended up going with LeSean McCoy, running back, heavy scoring. But since then, I've started to get nervous about my pick. Tyrod Taylor, you know, is making me a little nervous. They've got concerns with him. He doesn't look great. There's been rumblings about the Bills tanking the season. Like, they, of course, traded Sammy Watkins. But you've got McCoy as your PPR running back 3. So why should I stop panicking here, and why should owners yet to draft stand strong and take McCoy?
Well, and I would talk you off the ledge by saying that I've climbed out on the ledge as well. McCoy, I felt pretty good about him. I felt really good about him early in the offseason. I thought that with Tyrod Taylor and the healthy Sammy Watkins back, the running game there in Buffalo is real strong. Mike Gillisley was signed elsewhere, so that freed up some touches for McCoy. I still feel like he has the best chance of these guys to finish as a number 3 PPR running back, but certainly I've moved him down a little bit, and he's getting closer to Melvin Gordon, Devonta Freeman, and Jay Ajayi and those guys. You don't want a running back that's on a terrible team that's packing it in 8 games in, and we're starting to get that feeling from the Bills. I had Evan Silva on my 2017 draft strategy series on the podcast. And he's like, they traded away their best wide receiver and their best cornerback, and teams that are trying to win generally don't do that. So the thing that is the saving grace with McCoy is that I think he's a pro, and that even if he's on a bad team, he's going to put up good numbers. If they can stay competitive where they're 8-8, then he's going to play the full season and do well. The worry is that they get off to like a 2-6 start, and then the nagging injuries, you know, start to cause him to just sit out when, you know, when maybe he would normally play through those injuries. So, I would say I'm a little worried about it, and I'm not as confident as him, on him in the middle of the first round. I think I find myself taking receivers there, ahead of him, and he's starting to fall, what, to the 10th, 11th pick now, as opposed to being, you know, the fifth or sixth. And I think that's, due to the dependability you get with the Julio Jones, the Odell Beckham, although he's got the ankle, you know, AJ Green, even Mike Thomas, Mike Evans, there aren't a lot of concerns with those guys. And that's why I think he's fallen behind those players.
How far down the list of wide receivers do you go before you're going running back again with I guess McCoy at running back three?
I would have a tough time. I wouldn't take him over Michael Thomas. So I've got Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, AJ Green, Mike Evans, Michael Thomas. I think I would take all those guys for sure. And I might take Jordy Nelson over McCoy as well. And Jordy's going 111. So I think we're getting to the point where it just feels a lot safer to go with the receiver than the running back on a bad team.
Awesome. Well, very interesting. I'm definitely still on the ledge, but you know, great stuff there, John. And thanks so much for coming on. This is amazing stuff as always. Everyone, make sure to follow John on Twitter at 444_John. Check out all his work on the Most Accurate Podcast and at 444.com, which, in addition to consistently fantastic and super accurate rankings, has a lot of other really good content as well. A really good news section over there, great DFS section. So check out all the work at 444.com. John, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I love what you guys are doing at RotoViz. I use the game splits tool all the time, and I've checked out a bunch of articles in the offseason and everything. So I'm happy to be on the podcast, and keep doing the great work you're doing over there.
Thank you for listening to RotoViz Radio, the flagship RotoViz podcast. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, @RotovizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/radio.